we are involved in a week-long project. We call it Symphony Week. A lot of resources going into this. And so it involved us sending an audio team to the mansion of our concertmaster, Mateusz Wolski. And we kind of sneaked in and were able to catch them in the middle of a rehearsal. Let's find out what really happens behind the scenes in the preparing of music.
Sorry, David. You see, my butler, Rick, he sometimes has this grandiose idea that he's a musician. So please excuse us. Rick, don't you have some silver to polish? We are trying to play some serious music here, okay? Just go into your corner and don't bother us. All right.
Gentlemen, can we please get back to Mozart? And Mateusz, I know he's just your butler, but he's really excited and he has skill. Can he join us?
Fine.
Just another day in the Mateusz Mansion high on Spokane South Hill. We caught them in that rehearsal, so that is what goes on behind the scenes when music is made. Dan Cotter knows a lot about this because Dan Cotter has a house with a couple of kids in it, and he's a musician, his wife's a musician. It's this whole world of our wonderful, crazy lives of being musicians, isn't it?
Well, I used to have a house, but now it's just a pile of broken stuff that I live inside.
Yeah, because what musicians will do to it, especially when we let the drummers in. Okay, congratulations, and welcome, gentlemen. With us, not only Mateusz Wolski, but also David Armstrong. Those were the two violinists and the interloper, who's been interloping for a while, and that's Rick Westrick. In the scene of the M Show, and Mateusz, you sure know how to find people and how to find the great things in people, don't you?
Well, you know, I mean, as you can see, we are definitely open to some sort of shenanigans when we are trying not to be serious. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we are all very professional on in our day job, so to speak, and the way people perceive us sometimes can be actually a liability, I think. You know, people just view classical musicians as those really just serious, heavy practicing people that only enjoy fine and refined kind of art. And actually, when you go behind the scenes and you lift the veil a little bit, you can see that You know, we enjoy doing a lot of different things, and the M show is kind of a manifestation of, you know, what do we do after hours and how we goof around. And, you know, the little skit that you just heard was essentially like, hey, let's do something fun on the radio. And because I get to work with such a wonderful artist as Rick and David, it was like, okay, what are we going to do? And David, okay, I can write an arrangement. And Rick, okay, I can do this. And it was a wonderful collaboration just to, like, you know, kind of sit down, write stuff on the napkin, and let's go, let's do it. And, you know, and that's kind of the spirit of this whole enterprise.
So you need both skills and personality.
Yes.
For these two things. And so speaking of which, let's talk to Rick Westrick for a little while about those two things. First, Rick, good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Do you feel that you're profiled?
Help! 2 years ago, I was taken hostage and forced to work in butlery at the mansion of Mateusz. This is my first contact with the outside world. Please, somebody.
Rick, this isn't the time or the place. Mateusz isn't going to let you out.
Yeah, your check is in the mail, David.
And that has been the ongoing shtick. And our audience will never quite know when we're being serious and when we're not, and hopefully in the next few minutes. But the whole idea that you do need some consistency in the M show, that you need kind of some regular characters and some regular scenes. And so Rick, your hostage butler, trying to burst out has been one really valuable thing for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the thing is that when we did our first M show, you know, since it's not particularly a genre that anybody else is doing, really, especially not on the kind of in a collaboration with a serious symphony orchestra, you know. So when we're drafting kind of the ideas, one of the ideas how to make things funny, it's, you know, I have this wonderful percussionist that we introduce him as a butler, and then turns out that he's this wonderful percussionist, and people just love this kind of you know, underdog story. Mm-hmm. So we've been playing it out in all sorts of various ways, because it's just very much what we like to do, which is there's a perception of who we are, and we would like to burst and see people as look at us as, you know, somebody a little different and more complete. Mm-hmm. So Rick is not just a butler. It's really, you know, he is a fantastic friend and a great artist, and, you know, you know, I cannot say it on the air.
Call 1-800. Save your butler. Send money.
Yeah. See, I don't even have to write a script. You just let him roll. Yeah. Anyways.
And we'll probably have to talk about him since he's single-minded of purpose here, because but percussionists must have that great range. Rick, you have to be everything to everybody, from every sort of music. I mean, you've spoken lovingly to me about the magic of playing Prokofiev, and then you're put in the buffoon roles. You live in all these lives. What's it like being Rick Westrick?
Mostly, I live in the buffoon role, and I seem to gravitate towards that rather naturally, yeah. I think. I am really, really lucky, if I could be serious for just a moment, in that I get to experience so many different types of music and experiences here with Spokane Symphony, you know, the world's greatest music, and then great people to work with, and then a chance to not only do it seriously, as we all will tonight, but also to have a little bit of fun with it along the way. And Mateusz's M show has really opened that up for me.
Yeah. And the M show, which, by the way, has two appearances, one in January and one in May. So we'll give some dates about that in a minute. So that's not imminent, but they already have their opening, I think, for the January show all worked out. Then rotate that microphone a little bit toward David. And David Armstrong, mild-mannered second violinist there. Talk about your creative life, your compositional life, your experiences and the way you're able to apply them here.
Well, my first experience with having any of my music performed by the symphony was actually at one of the Arborcrest soirees on the Edge during the summer. a couple of my original compositions, tangos for a string quartet, we got to perform there. And then Eckhart actually commissioned a solo work that I wrote for another Arborcrest performance. And then Mateusz, from that, knew that I write music and that I arrange music and asked me if I could contribute to the M show in some way. And little did I know that it would turn into such a big thing, and so many varied things, from writing covers of different songs to doing mashups of different classical works to all kinds of shenanigans.
And pulling this back to Dan Cotter, because you're kind of like the wrangler as general manager that has to, or maybe I could say gets to, rope all of these interesting things together, and kind of talk about the symphony's underbelly when you just discover something interesting in somebody and figure out how that can be brought into programming, because this seems like a really fabulous example of that.
Well, I mean, this show was not my idea. Mm-hmm. Actually, it started out as a few years ago, Eckhart was looking at the programming for the following season, and he thought, well, what if we had a concertmaster kind of chamber music series where our concertmaster, you know, Mateusz, of course, would curate the programming, and it would just be something that was really about him and what he liked. And Mateusz thought about it for a little while and came back to us and said, hey, cool idea and everything. What if we made it like a late night talk show and had comedy and videos and all this, you know, viral videos playing? And I think that Eckhart had to think about it for a while. I think everybody had to think about it for a while.
He rejected it.
And we're still thinking about it a lot. And it turned into something completely different than what we originally conceived, which is amazing. And something kind of unique about Spokane is that we are breaking the mold of what an orchestra does. Normally, yes, orchestras have concertmaster chamber music series, you know, it's a very kind of cookie cutter thing that's done easily and quickly. And the amount of effort that Mateusz has to put in, and personality, I mean, really, he's the only one that probably any concertmaster in this country that could do this show.
Yeah. So the adage, be careful what you ask for.
But that's, you know, that's kind of the spirit, you know, you give him an inch and then, yeah, that's what happens. Yeah. No, but, you know, I think what is absolutely amazing, to kind of chime in about our town and our organization, is that you have actually people that are in the orchestra, in the management, that look at each other and see more than their kind of described roles. You know, Dan, for example, I mean, he's a wonderful clarinetist. Mm-hmm. He also happens to be the orchestra manager. You know, you look at David, you know, he plays violin fantastic, and then all of a sudden turns out that he has this amazing ability to arrange music. You know, Rick, you know, I knew Rick when I got here, and I was like, oh, you know, he can play some mean drums. Whenever we would have pops, he would always get the kind of spotlight, and it's like, who is this guy, you know? Because he seems just kind of funny, but when he just starts mixing it up on the drums, it's like, wow, you know, I mean, respect. And then all of a sudden, I had no idea that when we started doing this, that he has this whole really funny angle to him. And a big part of the job of orchestra musician is that you have a lot of complicated notes to learn, which means you come to your job, you practice your notes, you try to get the best you can through the rehearsal, and then you go home. And you don't really have much time to actually explore who you really work with and different projects of that nature, especially when you ask somebody to do something completely out of the box. I think what they did to us is that we got to know each other. We became friends. We all of a sudden, you know, I actually, for one of the shows, decided to learn how to play drums. And I was like, Rick, help me. How do you do this stuff? And, you know, it was a fabulous experience, but I have so much more respect and appreciation to what, for example, percussion section has to go through, and, you know, how difficult to do it well it actually is, you know. So in all, it actually... projects of that nature only, I think, happen here because we have people who who look at other people and say, you really want to do something new and interesting? Sure, go for it. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. And you know, it, and I cannot imagine another orchestra that would take chances to explore that. It takes, you know, it takes some bravery to do that. Mm-hmm. And Dan and Jeff and, you know, and Eckhart at that time. And now James, I was talking with him and I was like, hey, James, would you like to, you know, be part of the show? And she said, oh, sure, let's do it. I'm like, okay, you don't know what you're asking for.
Well, a little sideline. I'm the principal person talking right now, Mateusz Wolski, the concertmaster, and about the M Show twice a year, that wonderful variety show. Just last week, I had Jenny Ann Mannon in talking about the fiddle player, talking about her new CD, and talking really fondly about the time that she joined you, and you guys did about everything you could with the Vivaldi Four Seasons.
Oh, absolutely. You see, I mean, that's another aspect of things. I mean, we've been bringing special guests to the M Show, and we had Jenny. That was actually not even part of the M Show. That was when we were doing Terrain collaboration.
Right.
But it's kind of like it kind of grew from that. The atmosphere was there. But we had Chris Crocker, you know, who is meteorologist, but turns out she also can play a violin. I mean, recently we just had a, you know, heavyweight boxing champion, Hilliard Hammer. You know how, you know, so we are smashing things that are seemingly should not fit together. But, you know, I find it's like the particle accelerator. That's what the M Show is. You go, you smash them, and then you look at the little bits, and you discover, you know, and you really discover some stuff that you sort of knew it's there, but you could never actually observe it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we do science experiments too.
There's always a science experiment.
There is always. So this is all giant experiment, and we're in it having a ball, you know. I mean, so, but I think that people who listen, for example, to this show, can very quickly figure out that if you come and hear us play music, all this joy and laughter and creativity, it's really expressed through us playing the serious stuff. And if you didn't know us, maybe now you can do a little bit more. And then when we play and you see somebody wink at each other during the performance, you know what goes through our minds, and that, you know, we are actually trying to live life and communicate our joy of life through music. And you know, so that's essentially why I think why we do what we do. At least that's my motto.
Yeah. So that's the M Show, which is, as has already been alluded to, the real motivator for an attitude. And now let's talk about some of the things that grow out of that attitude. So I'll lean especially on you, Dan, but other people are welcome to join in, because just every year we see new different things about what you do for Halloween, about the movies, and this outgrowth of doing movie things. Talk about the new ideas that come along that you try.
Well, I mean, a lot of that creativity is Bethany and her just ability to work literally around the clock to create mm-hmm. these shows. We started having these more creative designed shows that we built ourselves as an effort to put something together that didn't cost as much to produce and at the same time was something that people wanted to hear and wanted to come to. And then once they had seen it and experienced all of the activities in the lobby, they wanted to come back. And it turned out to be a smashing success the first year. And the next year we, you know, ended up adding another show and another show. And so it's actually started to become our Halloween tradition to do this music of Harry Potter. And it's never the same twice. Bethany basically redesigns the entire show down to programming and guest artist appearances. We have dancers. We have had a magician and actors. And the lobby is filled with activities for kids and adults. And at one point, you know, we had a green screen with a green cape, and you could see yourself wear the cloak of invisibility. And it's just a kind of a giant party. And the music, on top of all of that, the music is good. It's exciting. You know, it's one of the more fun concerts that I've played here. It's nice to not feel like you're lowering your standards artistically to do something that's popular and that brings in a ton of people.
Yeah. And so that's the weekend preceding Halloween, and it's three shows, two on Saturday and one on Sunday on the weekend before Halloween. And then it goes out from there. What's this whole deal with the outgrowth of being able to actually play soundtracks to movies? Is this kind of something the movie industry has provided for orchestras to do?
That's correct. And so in that case, you have to pay a licensing fees to show the movie. And so if people don't know about it, it's an amazing concept where you get to watch an iconic movie live, and the orchestra is a live soundtrack in real time, following, and the conductor is following all these machines and trying to stay with all the dialogue, and it's extremely exciting. But those shows are pretty different as far as trying to help the budget for our nonprofit. Those shows are quite expensive to produce, and even, you know, at nearing sellout, it's breaking even at that point. Mm-hmm. And so we added a few, and we actually added quite a few movies this year.
It's actually a series?
Yes, it became a series, and we added one more to the series after that. starting with Tim Burton, Nightmare Before Christmas, and then we're having the Pixar in concert, which is a highlight of all the different Pixar movies, and the music for that is unbelievable. Well, everybody knows about Nightmare Before Christmas. The songs won't leave your head after you've seen the movie. And the Pixar one's a screaming trumpet, a just really impressive show. And then we have added Back to the Future. We're actually putting that on sale now. I think Jake is here to fill in the gaps on that. And we're going to do Star Wars Episode 4. I drew a blank. how could I forget Star Wars? Star Wars Episode 4, which is the first Star Wars movie ever made. Iconic soundtrack. Incredibly fun to play. And we've played the Star Wars music off and on for Pops concerts here and there, but not the full movie with Darth Vader and all of that.
Yeah. And so back to David Armstrong, because aren't you doing some arranging also for a Pops concert or
yes,
something?
Yes, Pops what, 4. Yeah, so Pops 4 is with Cherry Pop and Daddies. It's a swing ska band, and they don't have any charts for orchestra, meaning that they don't have any of their music that's been arranged to be able to play with an orchestra. And in order to be able to start touring, which is something they want to do, they needed to have charts written. So they're going to be coming here in February, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the middle madly writing the music for that right now. Basically, the way that works is they gave me some recordings and a few rudimentary charts of theirs, basically just like alto sax and tenor sax and trombone and trumpet parts. And I had to piece it all together, take that music, expand it out for a full orchestra, and at the same time try not to cover up what they do and just try to reinforce their music.
How does that work within your technical and artistic ability? Is that kind of a fun juggle?
It is. It's a little bit of a new thing for me. Most of the work I've done up until now is just strictly arranging, mm-hmm. meaning taking a piece and putting it for a specific ensemble. Mm-hmm. With this, I'm trying to match the orchestra parts along with something that's already been created. The stuff I've done up until now, a lot of the work for the M show involves some different ensembles ranging from just strings to having some brass and winds, and then percussion was the last one that we did. And before that, I've really only done string stuff. I've arranged quite a few different things for a string quartet. I've had a commission from the Spokane String Quartet to do an arrangement of a Beatles song, and then I've done a lot of work for Kleinman Strings, doing stuff for string quartet. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of my branching out moment to work with full orchestra.
David Armstrong finding his orchestra arranging chops here. You never suspected that probably when you auditioned for the Spokane Symphony 10 years ago.
I had hoped.
And hopes and dreams that hopefully come true. So those are a few of the things, a couple others that we're going to mention. One is, two of them are moving the soiree to the stage, and then also the coffee and classics on Saturday mornings before concerts. Talk about those two.
Well, this is Dan again. I'm extremely excited about moving the soirees to the Fox stage. I've played countless soirees myself, and these concerts are beautiful. They're elegant at the Davenport. We ended up, through our conversations with the Davenport, realizing that we would no longer be able to continue to have those concerts there. And so we did this massive search, venues all across the city, looked at every little thing. Nothing was quite right. And then I was talking with our production manager, and he thought, why don't we go back to the original idea his name is Chuck, Charles Karshny, the original idea that he had that was rejected early on was that we do them on the stage, and we actually face the back of the stage with the ensemble, and then put tables, just like at the Davenport, all across the stage. And I thought about it a while. He felt he could fit almost the same number of people. And we ended up, I think that conversation was put on hold for a while. And we had a couple of events when one of them was when we had the Entrio here. We had an evening soiree with them, and they had that exact same setup with tables and the ensemble facing the back. And I could hear every detail of their sound. You could hear the sound kind of blooming back behind the ensemble into where the audience is normally at in the Fox. But it also had presence, and I thought, wow, this is a really fun event. It's so elegant, and people can sit on the stage and look out, and the view from the stage of the ceiling, the painted ceiling murals at the Fox is actually, might be the best perspective. And then we had another evening soiree with our Classics 2 of last season with a red violin. Elizabeth Pitcairn came and played a recital there, and we had the same setup. And so after we did this exhaustive search for a venue for our soirees, where to move it, I started talking with Chuck again, and we got more serious about that, and we started talking about it with all the staff and making sure that everybody was interested in doing that as well. And so this season, we are actually going to try it. And I am playing a piece on one of the soirees, and I'm personally excited to play this soiree because of the venue, because of the sound. As a chamber musician, you want feedback from the room. You want your sound to bounce back to you so you can get a read on, you can get a sample of what's coming out of your instrument, and then you can adjust as you go, and it's a tool of expression. And so I don't think I've played chamber music in such a great acoustic in a long time, and I think everybody's going to be really happy with the way this concert.
Yeah, if I could chime in, I think that one of the things that comes out of this conversation, that when you think about the concerts of Harry Potter, or now the soirees, I think the big part of the thinking is that what is unique about experience of coming to the concert with Spokane Symphony? And what it turns out, yes, for example, we would do the chamber soirees in Davenport, which is wonderful, beautiful space. And, it kind of makes you feel quite special when you would enter that that ballroom in the Davenport. And that was nice. But imagine that you actually can come to the Fox and sit on the stage, not in the audience. It completely flips the things upside down and creates absolutely unique perspective and experience for people that, maybe they've came in, seen the stage, but they probably also wondered what it would like feel like to be sitting on this stage. And this event actually gives them this very unique experience. So I think everything that we are doing is trying to enhance and make it really something that stands out and is different and unique, not only in this town, but actually from it, that it stands out from all the other experiences all around the country. So I think there's several things that we can say, hey, we've done it first. And we were trendsetters, even though we are not New York or Chicago or one of those big things. But because of the people in this organization, I think the things are happening, and it's super exciting.
And the final thing about that is that you get to massively increase your repertoire possibilities because you have the piano there.
That's the huge thing, is that we have gone for so many years without piano. And chamber music, I don't know, at least half of the great repertoire has piano. And so this season is a little bit, maybe over the top. There's a lot of the pieces programmed are all kind of the big, great pieces that everybody has been waiting to play for a long time. So,
yeah. So that's the three. There's one in each season, fall, winter, and spring, one of which is coming up here in September, just here in a couple of weeks, will be the first of the soiree concerts on the Davenport stage. So many things. I think if we try to talk about many more, they'll get lost in the it's kind of like in the sedimentary rock of everything we're saying, other than quickly saying that you do have that opportunity now for the dress rehearsal, aren't you?
Right, the Coffee and Classics. Yeah. Yes, we. This is something that I've seen other orchestras do off and on, not a lot, but where they open the doors to the public to come and see us work. So it would be a few selected concerts where you can come on Saturday morning when we start our rehearsal, and there's donuts and coffee, and you get to watch us work, and our guest artist will be there, so you get to see a great soloist. And it's a kind of like what we've been talking about, a little bit of a behind the scenes experience. Now, the Saturday morning rehearsal, there's a lot more running through the pieces, so it won't be just us kind of stopping and talking the whole time. But it should be a really fun way to see us without our tails on,
so to speak.
Yes.
Okay. We'll leave that right
mine
there.
Mine reattaches.
And now, in the infrastructure department, and so Jake Ray, it's your challenge to make infrastructure interesting here. First, yeah. Good morning.
Well, thank you.
You're
good morning.
The box office manager. So how does your job or the new things that you folks have done through the Fox affect all of these things?
There are a couple of ways. There are micro ways and macro ways that kind of affect us as an organization in the box office. We have moved to our own ticketing system that just is ours. And while we have a lot of respect for our relationship with Tickets West, what this does for us is it allows us to make decisions when we want to. It allows us to make same day turnarounds on certain things like ticket prices, what sales we might want to do, what deals, basically just any offering that we want to do. It makes it a lot easier to collect information on patrons who come to see our shows so we can make sure that they're aware of all the things that we're talking about today. And on a macro level for the entire symphony, monetarily, frankly, you know, we're not necessarily splitting these fees. We're not splitting the cost of the ticket prices with a third or second party. And so other than shows that bring in secondary promoters, a lot of this stuff is coming directly back to a nonprofit organization that a lot of people love. So knowing that you're buying a ticket today versus last year at the same time, 100% of that ticket price is going to benefit the Spokane Symphony as opposed to a third party. So that's kind of the way to make it exciting, in my opinion.
It certainly is for the overview of the symphony. So there we have it. A lot of things this morning was about creative programming, and we've certainly had some creative programming, so some of the many interesting things going on. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about the meaning of music and its impact on the individual and community, and we have a couple people who I think are really going to get inside that topic and talk about why music deeply matters to the human condition. So we'll do that next week. But thank you, each of you, certainly Jake, who was just talking, and David Armstrong, the arranger, and Rick Westrick with the many aspects of his professional and beyond professional personality, and absolutely the creative mind of Mateusz Wolski. Thank you, Mateusz, and certainly Dan Cotter, either playing a clarinet or are attending to every detail that it takes a symphony to work. So thanks to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.